On behalf of Linda Kloss and myself, this is Leslie Francis, and we're going to get the Privacy, Confidentiality, and Security Subcommittee meeting going. Our agenda starts with 20 minutes for a discussion of our section of the HIPAA report. We're actually going to truncate that, and Maya is going to give us just, since we had some discussion earlier of what goes into the HIPAA report more generally, Maya's just going to tell you, give you a brief overview of what's in the draft, and then we'll make sure that it's up on the SharePoint for anybody who wants to make any substantive, what did we leave out on the privacy front kinds of comments. The real meat of this discussion is going to be what we are learning about stewardship, and we only have, I believe, an hour for all of that. So let's get going very quickly on the HIPAA report.
Thanks, everyone. I'm going to give you an overview of the sort of the sections of the report. The sense of the committee was to talk about the major accomplishments. Thank you. The major accomplishments that have happened. In the reporting period for the report, which is 2012, calendar year 2012 and 2013, right? Of course, the major accomplishment for OCR is the omnibus privacy rule. And all of you know, we've talked about that before, that there are basically comprises four rules modifying the privacy, security, enforcement, and breach notification rules under the High Tech Act, and then implemented the privacy rule, changes to the privacy rule arising from GINA, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act. So in the report, we describe those changes. And then we talk about the upcoming rules that have not yet been acted on. So that includes, in particular, the accounting for disclosures rulemaking and the recommendations of the Tiger Team, on which at least a couple of you guys sit, which is part of Paul's committee, for lack of
it's sick.
Right. And describe what happened, what their recommendations were, and so forth. And then just make mention that there are two other changes from the High Tech Act to limited data sets and the sharing of civil monetary penalties, which OCR has not acted on yet. And then we talk a lot about the similar things that Rachel talked to you about this morning, all the outreach that has happened to regulated communities and consumers, the nice things that have been happening on the – so talking from the committee's point of view, right? The nice things that have been happening on the website, the example notices and the YouTube videos. Maybe Rachel saw me have a little laugh with Susan earlier today when she said she picked out her favorite one, and I went over to Susan to say, really, her favorite one? It wasn't like all my children, you know, my favorites. But anyway, so the nice work that they've been doing on outreach, and I described each of the topics that OCR has been working on there. Then there is a few instances of other guidance of various kinds that I think Rachel mentioned this morning as well, and on their education initiative and so forth. So there's then the section on enforcement. We have yet to get, I think Rachel mentioned that there are two reports that they're coming out, and I expect that there will be more detailed information about the numbers, how many cases and that kind of thing on enforcement, how many resolved, how many not resolved, and how, which resulted in corrective action and so forth, which we will plug in to this report when they're ready, because it looks like the timing will be that those reports, they're in clearance, who knows, but it appears that those reports will come out before the committee's report. And then there is a discussion of the major cases. description of the major cases and what the actions were. These things are mostly public on the website, so it's you know, we're not reporting on anything that's a secret, basically. I think, let's see if that's it. And I think the other thing is to say is that in accordance with the committee's wishes, the tone of this section is that is very encouraging, hopeful, and optimistic about the work that OCR has been doing, the improvements that have made to enforcement, the outreach, and so forth, that's a good thing, and it is a very positive section of the report, and you know, that meets with what I understand is the committee's intention and direction for this section.
So if there is anything you think that we need to pay attention to when it goes up on the committee SharePoint that isn't in there, I would just add to what Maya said, that this is aimed to be dropped in, and that Section 6 that we were talking about earlier during the standards discussion will be the final section. So the goal of this section is to be informational about the encouraging development.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions, comments?
Okay. So our next agenda item here is a status report on what's been going on so far and what the subcommittee might be planning to do with respect to following up on community health data stewardship questions. I want to start by taking this opportunity to introduce a new name to folks around the table. On the phone, we have Maureen Henry, who Debbie very helpfully worked out a contract for us with Maureen. Maureen is got her JD from Bolt, the University of California at Berkeley Law School. She's been the executive director of Utah's Commission on Aging. And last year, she was a health and aging policy fellow working in the office of Senator John Warner of Virginia, right, Maureen? And she's now back in Utah, actually finishing her doctoral dissertation in nursing, as well as doing various kinds of consulting things. And we're extremely fortunate to have had Maureen helping us with the environmental scan and preliminary analysis that's on these slides. Maureen, we could never have gotten as far as we are now in terms of a progress report.
That is absolutely true.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Maureen.
Maureen has spent a lot of time on this. Although it's long distance, the most efficient thing might be, instead of having me be talking, Maureen, to have you talk us through some of these slides, if that would work for you, or is that going to be a mess long distance?
Maureen, I'm sitting in front of the slides, and I can turn them as you tell me. I'm sitting at the slide that says number 2, Stewardship Progress Report, Environmental Scan.
Are you there?
Is she on mute?
Maybe that's your answer.
Well, maybe I'll start going through them, and then, Maureen, if I get anything wrong, please chime in, okay? Something went with the phone. So what we asked Maureen to do was to identify. Yeah.
No, we're looking for Maureen Henry in Utah.
Okay. Salt Lake.
Well, okay. Something must have gone wrong with her phone. Okay, so we asked Maureen to do an environmental scan with respect to the kinds of issues that needed to be addressed, what sorts of protections communities had in place, and what is going on with respect to what we've done already. So Maureen has worked to, she began by revisiting the next steps that our prior stewardship work had discussed. The next slide is just a reminder of the bullet points in the letter of last December. And what we were intending to do, which was begin to work on developing dynamic guidance resources that compile best practices for experts, communities, and other data users to learn more about stewardship. Okay. Those were to include, and this is, again, a summary from our earlier letter, how-to examples and case studies, discussion of the risks of disclosure in data reporting, for example, aggregation, small groups, to look at data use agreements, how they might be used in their enforcement, to look at what some of the transparency and openness methods are out there, and to look at what's been being done with respect to community engagement and closing the loop with communities. Maureen, are you on the line there? Maureen?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Sorry, the hang-up button was right next to the mute.
Okay.
Well,
so I had suggested, if it would work reasonably, for you to take us through the next set of slides with respect to what you've what you did and what you found out. Will that work?
I'm happy to if you can hear okay.
We can hear you. Maureen, this is
yes.
Maya. I'm now looking at the slide that says environmental scan de-identification.
Okay.
And I'll turn your slide for you. I'm sitting here.
I just wanted to tell you I'm on the line.
Hi, Gail Horlick.
Hi.
From the CDC, whoever's taking notes.
Yeah, and Linda's on. Linda Kloss is on the line as well. So, Maureen, would you like to get started on what you've done and how you summarized it here?
Yeah, that sounds great. So I was asked to do an environmental scan to follow up on some of the people who testified at several different hearings and whose experiences with using health data at the community level and the notion of stewardship in that context to see whether there had been any changes in the concept of privacy as they were addressing it. One of the things that I saw in both an environmental scan that Susan Kinnane had done as well as some of the hearings is that not all of the folks who testified at those hearings had not that they weren't paying any attention to privacy, but that it wasn't a major focus necessarily. So what I found in reconnecting with many of those individuals was that de-identification continues to be a major approach to privacy in this context, that the safe harbor for de-identification under HIPAA provides protection as well as some of the state public health laws, that it along with aggregation seem to be the primary means of privacy protection when communities use health data. And some examples of that I found were in the context of community commons as well as the Chicago Health Atlas. Some of the risks of de-identification that remain is that it may never protect privacy. And again, this was mentioned at past hearings that it isn't a fail-safe, and especially increasingly with the rise of big data and the combination of privacy issues arising where de-identified individual data is being linked to publicly available data. At the community level, I did not find many examples where de-identified data is being backed up by data use agreements that would prohibit re-identification attempts, although I know that this is present at a lot of state-level public health agencies. And one of the other things I saw was that the provider's privacy, especially things like quality reporting, sometimes are more prevalent in data use agreements where they exist than individual privacy concerns. Some of the risks, there have been a couple of recent examples that have been pretty public. One of those is the AOL's CEO's disclosure of the two babies that were born that caused substantial impacts on the cost of healthcare for the company. And there's been some discussion around the privacy issues raised by his public disclosure, as well as the sale of state hospital data by Washington State that a researcher then connected back to the individuals whose de-identified data was sold, and by looking at publicly available sources, she was able to re-identify a number of people, and that was published in Bloomberg News. So going back to the outline of what we were recommended, what the committee recommended in past letters to the secretary, there was a question about how to examples and case studies about de-identified data, and the recommendations between that and what I learned in the environmental scan was to provide some plain language information to community level users of data. For example, a plain language description of what HIPAA de-identification is, some of the CDC requirements. The HCUP data set is one that several of the people I talked to referred me to. Also, what state health department laws and regulations say about de-identification and other approaches to de-identification, some of which are present in a recent report that was published.
I'm going to just break in here to say there was discussion this morning about some work that's going to be done at HHS involving some of the risks with respect to de-identification, and we might add to that list some plain language thinking about how to talk, how to alert communities to what some of those risks are. I think maybe an underlying theme of what you found out here was that communities need a lot more plain language explanations across the board on all of these. Maybe we should stop here for a minute and ask if where we think subcommittee next steps should be on the de-identification front. Should it be working with what HHS is doing, and in particular emphasizing the importance of plain language explanations on all of these fronts? Subcommittee folks.
I think the idea of plain language would be helpful to communities and to state and public health organizations, but I think we have to figure it out first. I know we're still challenged with, and I'm talking in the non-HIPAA environment, what disclosure limitation techniques to use and how to determine if they're efficient. Do you need to look at other publicly available data sets? Do you need to look at your own features, your own geographies, what's going on with your demography? And how do you do that with the level of staff that you typically find in government organizations below the federal level and in communities? I think we need some easy to follow. We need to figure it out for those people and then put it in plain language.
Other thoughts? Yeah, Jim?
What do we mean, this is Jim, what do we mean by plain language? Do we have a definition?
That would, Maureen, did you pick up anything from the people you talked with? I know you talked to a lot of people.
Yeah. Are you hearing me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. What I heard was that what people see about things like HIPAA is very complex. And so I think by plain language, I'm using it not in any technical sense, but in a practical sense of something that a community group could take and understand and apply at some level, not legal language, but relatively easy to understand concepts.
Yeah, I would propose that as a contribution to the nation's understanding of information communication, that we define it, and something along the lines of language that's understandable by 85% of the target population, and understanding that we're not always going to have the money to measure that, at least it ought to be, we ought to have some kind of notional target so that we at least know what we're talking about if someone did give us money to test it.
So I think that there is actually a standard, at least that the department uses. My understanding, I could be wrong about this, but the videos and other materials that Rachel's described to you, I think are shooting at an eighth grade reading level. And
right, but that's the specific reason that I suggested. What I suggested was that we have different target audiences.
That's true.
And surely if it's a lay audience, a population of patients or healthcare consumers or citizens, something like sixth or eighth grade, but it might be for these other groups that would make, if you're trying to communicate anything
more
at a professional level, that becomes untenable, and besides it would be irrelevant. You know, what I'm saying is if 85% of the target population understands it and it's 13th grade reading level, hallelujah.
So there are also plain language, and I don't know if they use the same standards, but the federal government also has plain language rules, and the president years ago had an executive order on regulatory language. So we're a regulated audience, we're a professional audience, but, you know, so there are models we could look at, is all I'm saying.
Bruce?
Great idea.
Maureen, I was very interested in getting more feedback in your conversations with community groups. I think one of the huge benefits we could make is increasing awareness of the importance of explicit stewardship practices with regard to data that communities hold, or as communities get into collecting data more, this needs to be part of the culture of what they're doing. So any thoughts or comments?
Yeah, that was very much part of these discussions, and it was part of what we set out to look at, in that providing the frameworks that are out there cover some of the ground, but maybe not all of the ground, and that a combination of a framework with specific elements, but then backed up by a little bit of education, for example, about how you can use data use agreements to back up the identification, that those are some of the, that it was both an explicit stewardship framework, but it was also education behind the stewardship framework, that there seemed to be a desire. And some of that was expressed as what's needed at the community level for communities using other data sources as well as collecting their own. But it was also expressed by public health officials at the county and state level as well, that this could be very helpful not only to community groups but also to public health officials.
Bill?
I think the reality is that with many of the things we're talking about doing, as you play back to the conversation we had with the data work group, this problem is getting exponentially harder. And so I think we need to be thinking more, what are recipes that can be applied in this situation that work. I think if we don't, it doesn't necessarily get to be something we can automate, but if we don't at least get it to a recipe, I think we have very little hope of effective uptake.
Paul?
It's very much like Bill's comment. I don't know that turning a complex subject that's even hard for very sophisticated users, I'm not sure it's possible to turn to plain language. So I don't actually even think that's necessarily the goal. Raising the awareness is a goal, and that can be accomplished through common language, but I don't think explaining this problem in common language, whatever the term you use. And I would go with Bill in the sense of, I'd almost go back to the checklist. We talked about consumer checklists so we can help educate consumers on what questions you would be concerned about or check your own concern level, and then what to ask. Same thing here. It's almost like a toolkit, as they were talking about in CMS, where how do I even know whether I have a problem? Well, you almost plug in the numbers. What's your population? What population do you think this covers? You get the 4,000 point. And then it gives you the answer of, gosh, here are the things that you should be concerned about. Here are some ways you can mitigate that to some extent, but this is the only level you're going to be able to mitigate that, and here are the expert resources that you can. It really walks you through and then gets you right to the resource. Sometimes it can be calculated to give you an answer and say, man, we can't do this on 100 people. There's no way you can de-identify that. So let's not even take that project on. Or here's the resources. There's a phone number, et cetera. I mean, I think that's the value, not turning something that's impossible, this complexity, into plain language.
The three other areas that Maureen picked up on primarily were, when she talked to people, were data aggregation, the data use agreements, and community engagement as aspects of stewardship that this committee could be very helpful in developing. I mean, we were just talking about de-identified, and this is not to, and so I'm a little worried about time.
I would suggest we hear the rest of the report, and then we would really benefit from everyone's thought about what to do next, because you'll recall we did the joint hearing and came away from that with the recommendation that case studies would be useful. So environmental scan is showing us that they're in short supply. So this discussion about framework, recipes, is just very helpful. That's exactly what we're trying to get to. And perhaps if we hear the other three areas and then circle back to this, that would be great.
Yeah, but okay. We only have 20 minutes.
Okay,
right.
So.
Just as a point. Yeah. Now, a lot of this stuff we've covered even in this discussion before, so do we need to hear that again, the environmental scan and the understanding of the problems, or should we get general principles like we're talking about recipes on? Where's the direction of recommendation?
I think it might be helpful that the data aggregation, we had some discussion of this morning. It might be helpful because I think it's quite new to look at the data use agreement and community engagement sections. So could we pick up there?
Sure. I'm going back, I believe it's to slide 17. Oh, I'm sorry, no, I'm still in aggregation. Okay, so slide 19 is data use agreements.
Yeah.
And again, in talking to various people, both at community and health department levels, there was discussion of data use agreements. I found very few examples of data use agreements being used at the local level, whether by, I think virtually none within community level users that I talk to, and with shared data sets, the sensitivity seems to be much more to the provider side and the providers not wanting information about their practices going out publicly. So it was interesting that that's the area that's been the focus, not on personal privacy. But I think there's wide agreement that data use agreements could be an effective backstop to the challenges of re-identification in particular, and that one of the benefits of data use agreements is that you can get to a level of granularity that you may lose when you start to de-identify or aggregate data if you have some kind of an enforceable mechanism. The downside is that enforcement can be difficult and costly, and that the theme I got from my stand was very similar to the recent hearings, which is that there's very little monitoring or follow-up after data is shared, and that there is not standardized language that's used across data use agreements. So that was one of the concerns. I have been collecting examples, and one of the recommendations that we'll put on the table is that we pull out of those examples some of the elements that if a community is looking at using data use agreements, that they make sure that they cover these specific elements. But I think the larger message from the data use agreements is that they're just not even on the radar of most of the community level users that I talk to, and that the benefit here may be, as someone mentioned, a toolkit that would explain to community organizations why you would want to use data use agreements and how they can help to add an additional level of protection beyond aggregation and re-identification. And then the last piece is the community engagement. This is really an interesting one in that it seems like it's engaging communities in advance of the collection or repurposing is not quite a panacea, but almost, that it seems to avoid downstream problems like the ones that I know have been talked about in hearings before, the Havasupai settlement, as well as the destruction of blood spots in Texas. It seems like it can also improve the quality of data collected when you have communities participating in identifying what the objective is, then you can more effectively collect the data that answers the questions, and sometimes those questions are different from the community perspective versus the public health or research perspective. Community engagement can help improve access to study participants. The Patients Like Me database is an example, and can improve design of data sets as well. So one of the things that I heard several times in a lot of different settings is that there really isn't the same concern about privacy in some of these community-level data collection efforts, that they say, well, yeah, we know that it can be an issue, but people aren't concerned. And so some examples that I heard about there, and I'm skipping down a couple of slides, that small ethnic communities find it more important to understand the true needs and to be asked about the issues than to not be asked at all. So that's the engagement up front. And another was privacy hasn't been an immense issue. We try to keep data anonymous and confidential, but individuals are willing to forego privacy when they feel like it has the effect of educating others and promoting awareness. So So that was an interesting theme that came out, was that community engagement really does seem to change the way people view the privacy concerns. So the recommendation here was to find and describe some of the effective models of community engagement and potentially use that, again, put that into something like a toolkit, although anyone who's worked at the local level knows how difficult it can be to get community engagement, and it can be very expensive to get community engagement. So would you like me to stop there, Leslie?
Yeah. What I'd like to do is to flip on now to what we have some slides that are called Proposal for Next Steps, and that will, of course, start with synthesizing the findings and recommendations from past letters, identifying communities. We have a much bigger list than the original list. And on aggregation and de-identification, I think what we would be doing is separating out the technical stuff that HHS is going to be working on. And then as that gets developed, trying to help figure out what would be toolkits, checklists, what to look for, and things of that sort for communities. I'm summarizing the slide that was just up. So let's see.
Will you take a framing question?
Yeah, this would be what I was just going to say. I think I was just summarizing slide number 36.
Here's 38.
My question is, we've identified in these slides anonymization as a separate category, and it's really one of a variety of techniques used by folks in de-identification. You also have suppression, you have perturbation of the data. So I'm wondering, why are we calling out one technique, or are we really talking about the bigger question of de-identification?
It's a placeholder for the bigger set of questions.
You're right, but that's not a precise use of language there.
So, yeah, Paul.
I guess I'm having a little bit of a question about a little deja vu, because I thought we had this same set of issues, same set of findings from our hearings with other communities, and we came up with same issues. And I wonder if, like the data use work group, shouldn't we move to something we can do tomorrow? And that's where I think the recipe and the toolkit may be more useful. The de-identification problem doesn't go away. It actually gets harder as we get to the community level. I think for the reasons that if HIPAA and BAAs worked perfectly, we wouldn't even have this discussion. The whole problem, because they wouldn't get out of the sources without the accompanying restrictions, et cetera. So I'm not sure that we can place much hope on the data use agreements.
In general, we're talking about data that's not covered by HIPAA.
Okay, but I'm not sure that my point is, if everybody both knew, understood, and could perfectly execute HIPAA, then there's a lot of problems that would go away. Problem is the complexity, and then the whole, once it gets out of your hands, what happens to it. I think the same issues will happen with data use agreements. It might actually be effectively applied with the very first transfer. I would actually have some skepticism about that, just because of the complexity of you're not here. Well, anyway.
We're not talking about data that's originally covered by HIPAA either. We're not necessarily talking about HIPAA-covered data. We're talking about data that may be collected from the community, but it's not necessarily medical record data or insurance data. That those are the things that are covered by HIPAA.
Okay,
so
I'm making
about other things that need some kind of, as I understand the intention of the committee, other things that are maybe including HIPAA originally covered things, but things that the community might use, other data sources that the community might use that have, they're not.
So I think maybe let me step back.
Payment, they're not covered entities.
The overarching comment I'm making is, can we solve this problem with can we solve this risk with policy? I'm not sure. Policy and signed agreements. I'm not sure we can.
Well, what
but that's
what I think the suggestion was here on the I'll go back to the de-identification and aggregation one first, that our next steps as a subcommittee are going to be to work with HHS as it develops what it's doing on the technical side, and for us to get examples of how communities have been doing a variety of things in this space that could then be a toolkit for communities who want to use anonymization techniques as a helpful measure. What should they be looking for? What should they be aware of as possible risks? What are some of the methodologies that they could use? So we're thinking informationally. And as I understand it from Jim's discussion earlier, we don't even know what all those risks are. That's part of what HHS is going to be working on with the pilots and other things. Lucera. Oh, yeah, Larry.
Well, I want to build off of something Bill said a few minutes ago and then keep going from what Paul triggered off for me. There may be an analogous situation here to the discussion we had this morning about the work group letter. The positioning of this, I think, is I would suggest it needs better positioning so that the end user in mind, communities wanting to use data, mm-hmm. would understand what was being talked about here. And there's something akin to a taxonomy, but it's not exactly a taxonomy, of the issues that we are presuming people know what a a data use agreement is.
Sometimes it feels like a disease.
ICD-10?
We're, pick your example.
Paul alluded to something. Yeah, Maya's response to one of Paul's things, well, we're not talking about HIPAA-covered data. That's a big damn deal right there. That, I spotted that in real time in this room this afternoon. Most community users don't even know what that meant and why it was so important. Maya knows why it's important, but they don't. So upstream from the details mm-hmm. that you're working on, there needs to be a funnel of some sort that says, in the new data world, proper use of data is, who said it's getting worse? You said, Bill said,
harder.
This is getting harder. Yeah, not worse, I'm sorry, harder. And if it could be set up that way so that then these mm-hmm. recommendations, which are needed, I mean, don't hear me arguing against that, but then a user, thinking about the user mm-hmm. in mind, they say, that's why I need to pay attention to this. I don't think that's there yet, and that's part of Jim's plain language stuff. It's not the reading level, but it's putting it into a position so that normal people can say, this is why I need to pay attention to this. One more thing I'll hush is we've also had prior discussions about use cases, and
right.
you can see them coming up.
Oh, yeah, there are examples of them in here.
And one thing may be to restrict the work in the letter to a limited number of use cases, use a limited number to call out high probability situations that communities all across America are going to face, and where when you work through that use case, they basically say, well, we can do that. Or that's like our problem. This is what we're supposed to do. Is this making sense
to you? Yeah, this is sounding like almost what we want to be doing is producing something of an electronic report that says, here are the major things communities need to be aware of out here. and then some hot buttons. So here's your little HIPAA primer. Here's your primer about what a data use agreement is, what their usefulness might be, what are some of the common elements you might want to have in them, what, you know, maybe sample language even. This is not recommendation. This is toolkit type stuff for a community that wants to do it. And the same thing about engagement, the same thing about the use of various statistical techniques to mask or whatever. And the letter would be to say, Secretary, keep supporting us as we produce this, because this will need to be an ongoing set of educational materials in a way.
Yeah, I had the idea was we were going to, or that the subcommittee was proposing to make some kind of resource guide, essentially.
Exactly, yeah.
And if it's electronic pointer system to other resource, lay out, as Leslie said, certain of the basics, think questions you could be asking, all of Bill's suggestion, and then pointers to other resources or where we have the information, you know, a simple discussion with you can find more information here, here, or here. A useful guide of some kind, or whatever form that might be.
A community's guide to data stewardship.
Robert had his.
Sorry, Robert, and then Bruce. Yeah, Robert.
Yes. So I actually like where the conversation is going because I think it is, people mentioned risk. I think people mentioned, what is doable, meaning like a toolkit that's available to communities. I think that the context that we have to understand it, and I think this committee has even tackled it in its data stewardship papers as well as other places, where it is all about risk management because the data will be compromised, and to assume that it will not be compromised is quite frankly unrealistic. So the question is, on the front end, this is what you do to minimize or mitigate the risk. Once it happens, inevitably it would happen, and it may be smaller, what do you do in order to address once it's... from a risk perspective. And yes, all those are techniques in order to... So anonymization, pseudo-anonymization, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are some of the things that might be available to large and small communities.
Bruce?
I too think the flow of this conversation is spot on. It gets back to where we started the conversation many long hours ago around usability and utility and usefulness to communities. So what is useful for communities, what would maximally be useful is something that they could get so they could understand the issues, whether it's written or a video or a combination of, so they get what the issues are, what the problem is, and have options for solutions. I think this really carries on. I mean, when we talk about communities as learning systems, you know, this is a perfect example of where we can meet them where they are and really provide value. So I really appreciate this discussion. I think it's perfect.
Alex and then Sally.
Building on Bruce's comment, it's about the convergence and of the HIPAA and the high-tech worlds, and there's a sweet spot already happening with the National Privacy and Security Framework and the decomposition work that's happened over the last decade with at the state level that needs to inform this discussion to connect the world to HIPAA or not to HIPAA, but to do the right thing.
Sally?
I'd like us to, after this meeting probably, really focus on honing down these use cases. Mm-hmm. So that we really understand what the community's needs are. When we had our workshops, I didn't hear that communities were collecting or creating a lot of their own individually identifiable data. In fact, they weren't even using a whole lot of that from others. So I'd like us to test the proposition as to whether they're really going to be in the position of disclosing personally identifiable data or whether they're more often to be in the position of receiving a data use agreement to sign it to get data and really not know what it means that they're signing or not know how to implement controls that are in it. So I think a little bit more work on that end would be useful, because I don't know that there will be that many communities that will actually need to have their own DUAs, at least based on what we heard in the last couple roundtables.
Well, and I think Maureen would confirm that based on the conversations she's had, and our reason for doing an environmental scan is to see if the tools did exist.
I think, Maureen, maybe you can comment on this, but what you found was that there was a lot of silence on that.
Right. Yes, there was some silence on that. I think that where it's going to be potentially increasing is with the emphasis on community-based participatory research and some of the outreach that's happening, for example, through PCORI, where you've got academics and to some degree even healthcare organizations reaching into the community to learn more about what's happening at the community level from members of the community, where there may in fact be this data collection process. So that's one piece. And then the other piece is coming in the other direction that Sally's talking about, where they're also going to be on the receiving end of it. So I think I heard a little bit of both, but there's definitely, I think, an emerging trend towards collecting community-level data through CBPR as well as patient-centered within a community framework.
This is Gail. I just wanted to make two comments. One, that I know the focus of this is on communities, but as we're just talking about developing that resource with the primer on HIPAA and what these terms mean, I kept thinking that would be so valuable for us in public health. I talk about HIPAA all day long. CDC is not a covered entity. We get our data from covered entities, but I've been doing this for 10 years since the rule. I mean, I'm getting that today. What does that mean? So I think and we get things like all the time about, well, this is de-identified. Well, yes, but if you put those facts in and it's identifiable, people that are not immersed in this, that want to do the right thing, are not aware of what is going on. That's my daily experience, and I wanted to just second the comments that were made about the engaging the communities, because that is being done in public health at the local, state and local level, for example, where there's mandatory reporting of CD4 and viral log counts previously that was never used to contact individuals because we had to maintain trust and strict confidentiality. And now, by engaging the community, they're using the data differently with the community support because they know that it's not necessarily the death sentence that it was, and there have been advances and changes in values. So I know what the focus is, but as you were talking, I thought we could really use this. So I just wanted to share that.
So producing this seems to be our subcommittee work plan. If you go back to the agenda, this was the status report, and the next bullet was subcommittee work plan for the balance of 2014. Am I hearing something that sounds quite like a subcommittee work plan? Continuing to develop where we've been going along these lines, informed by some of obviously the rich discussion we've been having. Vicki, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I want to pick up on what Sally was saying, because I think this is a really critical issue, and particularly if in the scan you're doing, you're going back to the same people, I want to kind of broaden what it is that we're going to build on and what it is mm-hmm. we're thinking about. First, I think in terms of what we heard much earlier in terms of hearing, it's a little different than what we're talking about. So the issue of whether what we're doing fits what is a real HHS need but if what we're doing fits a community need, I think it's very different.
Yeah.
Communities actually need much more around trust building in terms of the process. It's not like they're going to really deal with HIPAA. They really want to deal with what happens with data, and they're interested in very specific data. And it's usually not data they collect. It's data that HHS collects, or it's data, usually it's the state and the Department of Public Health. They're more worried about where do my STD data, and when I tell my doctor X and Y. They have mixed so many different sources of data up when you go and work with the community that we really have to have a lot of clarity, because what happens in with a survey is going to be so different than what happens in terms of the data they give when they go in to see a provider. So I think, one, we have to be really clear what arena we're playing in. And if it's for HHS, it may be around either, you know, clinical data or survey data. The second thing is that I think there's a lot done that we probably need to go to. Like, for example, the group called Campus Community Partnerships. They have research ethics. They have sample MOUs, MUAs, to say when somebody wants to get data from you, use these things. And they have things about research ethics and what have you. But it's usually an assumption not that the community is collecting the data, but that other people are collecting the data and you're a subject or a participant. There's also, and Larry can, you know, kind of talk about this probably, is the CTSIs now have developed material. PCORI has developed material. So there's a lot of stuff, but what our job may be is to really figure out what kind of data, for whom, and what is it that HHS needs to really be the leader about. Because I don't think they can be the leader in all data, but I think that there's certain data that their leadership is very much needed.
Perhaps as a suggestion, Maureen has prepared a whole set of appendix slides, backup slides, and we should have these slides and the backup slides posted on NCVHS SharePoint, and people can suggest additional. Maureen has a whole list of everybody she's talked to and all that sort of thing. So, and many of the, yeah, there's an
addition to the, oh, okay.
There's an additional whole set that we have as backup, but obviously we only had 45 minutes for this discussion, so it's been pretty truncated. But what might also be helpful would be to have Maureen talk to members of the committee who have additional information that they might be willing to share about things like that. So does that make sense, Maureen?
Absolutely. That sounds great.
Okay. Sorry, Paul, and then Bruce.
This morning I think we sort of had a breakthrough in terms of we had this rich discussion about the data use, and then we had this narrowed scope and it made everything fall into place. And I think maybe we need to make sure we understand when you said we're going to next steps, that we all have the same understanding is what's the, I think, a new way of framing it, at least the way I heard the discussion. So we might have originally once went out seeking solutions that we could give people, just it's a dissemination problem. I think based on our hearing, you know, 3 years ago and reconfirmed by this environmental scan, is there probably aren't any of the kind that we originally envisioned. So maybe our goal is really to create informed communities that are getting value out of data, both understanding the benefits and the risks. That's a different goal. And it may have a different, quote, product from us. That's what I took away from the discussion. I don't know whether I'm on the right page or the same page with you, and it'd be useful to probably make sure we're...
My understanding has been, and maybe we're just using different terms, but that all along our aim has been to produce a resource guide.
I don't know that that's enough. I mean, I think that wasn't what Bill called a recipe or what I call a toolkit.
Well, okay, then just different words.
There's plenty of resource guides that sit on the shelf, and we create some of those ourselves. I think we're creating new products. We are creating new products. Like I heard the CMS. So there was no amount of resources, no amount of libraries that were going to help the small providers do the security risk assessment. That was their conclusion. And what they did was created a toolkit so anybody could walk up and be led through what it takes.
Yeah, sure.
I think we have the same problem. It's not plain language we're trying to create. It's the toolkit of how anyone, any community can walk through.
Yeah. We're fine on that. Yeah.
Not just with links.
Yeah.
But, great.
Yeah. Jim?
I don't think it's a toolkit either. I think that's prejudging the answer. If I were responsible for building tools like this, which I am, the ideal would be to start with a cognitive work analysis and say, what are people doing? And assume from the outset, although it may not be true, that there be some things they're doing that we can support with something we can build in some affordable way. And there'll be other things we can't support. And so that's part of the issue, say, what can we support, what can't we? What's important enough to need support, prevalent enough in the pot, you know, happens often enough, has a big enough impact on public health, pick your criteria. And then, you know, understand what, and I think we have some of that, and I'm guessing Vicki and others have it in their heads, it's just that I don't. You know, what actually is the process that's going on? And is the issue that there are community organizers out there, and the thing is to get them knowledgeable, give them tools and access to a phone number. What exactly is the insertion point into the process where we can make a difference? And then what is the thing that we would insert? I guess I'm trying to say, what I think Paul was trying to say is, it isn't clear to me what the question is that we're trying to answer. I don't think it's crisp and specific. And I think if we could say, we think we can help people that have this kind of skill sets and are trying to do these kinds of things with these kinds of information resources, and what they would need is this kind of thing, and it's an MOOC or it's a whatever the heck it is, I think we could just be a lot crisper about that framing and not end up with another tool set that nobody can use. What people don't want is a toolkit. They want a solution.
Bruce?
So this reminds me a lot of the community readiness discussions because everybody is in a different place and, you know, there's an enormous diversity of needs. Some communities exclusively use state data. Some communities actually are collecting their own data. I think, you know, what we're discussing is more a management of the flow of the work that you guys are going to need to do in terms of clearly identifying your audience and your target for what I would say would be a series of primers, toolkits, I think probably YouTubes might end up being the best way to communicate the information with, you know, whatever dissemination strategies, and this is something that we need to do collectively, is to focus on being more thoughtful to disseminate what we do in a way that is useful to the targets that we are trying to disseminate information to. But I think what's laid out here is not a one-year work plan, but a several-year work plan to provide utility to a whole diverse set of potential users, whether they're from CDC, you know, or whether they're from, you know, West Baltimore. So good luck.
Thanks. Lynn has a card up, and then I want to turn it to Linda to at least talk through whether we need any more guidance about where to go next. Lynn?
I find it helpful to think about, like, if I was at the community level, what kind of data are you collecting and what do you need to be concerned and aware about? So just to think about what data are you collecting and what kind of risk and things do you need to be worried about? And if you're collecting information about people's health behaviors and health status, you go down this route. If you're collecting aggregate data from the health department, you go down this route. It's like what I know as a university professor, if I do anything, I have to go through IRB, and they tell me sort of if you're doing this, this, or this, there are different ways to go. Mm-hmm. So it's I think maybe that might help frame, and, you know, some of it's going to be HIPAA, some of it will be data use, some things, you know, mm-hmm. will be, you know, public data that you can use freely and put in with a bunch of other stuff and do your community assessment, and it's fine. So that's just
that's how. Thanks.
Sense.
Yeah. Thank you, Linda. Do you want to chime in? And
thank you. One of the advantages of being remote and on the phone is that I have a chance to quietly listen and capture notes. As we heard earlier in the day, I think the overall consensus is that we narrow and clarify our intended audience, and it may be more narrow than we'd like to begin with, but make sure we're very clear on that. I think this last discussion was very instructive that one of the ways to do it, maybe rather than the audience, is to begin with the type of data, and I think we can think that through. Originally, our game plan for the next several months, and we're happy to have had a chance to get reaction on this environmental scan. I think we had hoped that we would find some great examples. We could, as you'll see now, I'm going back to the slide deck, if you will help me with that, Maya.
I'm listening. Where do you want to go?
I want to go to the slide 39, our work plan. We had...
with the table?
Yeah, with the table.
Okay.
So what we're working on is this task 1A and 1B, starting with the environmental scan research in Q1. We had made an assumption that we would convene perhaps another workshop or another hearing out of this, but I think the subcommittee needs to regroup on whether that's the right next step or whether the next step is to do the definitional work and just begin outlining and compiling what might be in the recipe book or whatever we call it. If not a toolkit, then a set of recipes or checklists condense what we've learned about the critical aspects. So we'll update that next step, and we'll welcome your thinking about that. But it may not be that a Q2 or Q3 workshop is in order, or in fact it may be, but the path may be more of a design task, I think, which was one of the ideas that we had as well. We're committed and determined to get some a real product out of this exploration, and so what you heard today was environmental scans leading to decision about what product. We did not see this as a summative report by any means. And to continue to work in collaboration with public health standards and population to contribute in that regard. So this has been helpful, and we've captured notes, and we'll regroup as a subcommittee and figure out what next steps are in our plan of attack.
Okay, Jim.
Yes,
just real quick,
next,
an example
step
question.
On our work plan, then, if there aren't any comments, is to finalize the HIPAA report to Congress. And the third work plan that we presented last fall called for us to pick up this year one additional privacy issue. It may be something outstanding remaining from HIPAA that needs further attention. We certainly heard the discussion today about data segmentation. Perhaps that fits into this emerging issue area as a ripe area for further work by the subcommittee, and we'll appreciate your thoughts on that also. Our plan was really to decide on what that additional issue that represented a most pressing priority, and to do that in June so that in the fall we could do the groundwork and have some kind of letter on this emerging issue ready for committee next February 15th. So I think we're making progress on our game plan, and we really thank Maureen for her great work and her partnering with us, and we'll move on from here.
Okay.
Back to you, Leslie. I think on the fourth item on our agenda, we have a few minutes left to close the loop on accounting for disclosure, which was our final agenda item.
Yeah, our final agenda item was we participated with the Tiger team on in a hearing on virtual hearing on accounting for disclosures. The recommendations, which went to the policy committee of OMC, and which I guess were accepted and passed on. They were
transmitted
to the
same day, I think.
Yeah, to the Secretary of HHS. Basically, the recommendations were a stepwise set of start with accounting of disclosures outside the entity, and for internal uses, rely primarily on the patient's right to request an investigation of an inappropriate disclosure. I don't know that there's anything more that we have to do on this immediately other than to just say that that's the current status of things. Okay. Well, Linda, thanks for being remote, and Maureen, thanks again for all the amazing help, and now it's Larry's turn.
I wanted to go back. Jim was passionately saying something that I want to know what he was saying.
Yeah, and then his card went down.
I thought I was calm and controlled. just an example question. Whenever we decide who the target audience is, what are their preferred learning modes?
Okay, excellent.
Do we know that?
Yeah.
If we did, then we could say, is it a video? Is it just a well-written Word document? Is it a checklist?
Yeah, that's helpful. Yeah.
And even just starting to answer, even asking the questions.
Yeah, yeah.
Leslie, I want to add a tangential comment. I want to ask you guys to add to your context for this three-part report now, because we think part four, there's nothing further to do right now.
Yeah.
Communities are using data that are far outside of HHS's jurisdiction.
Right.
And we need to not resist that, but embrace that and begin to wrestle with the implications of that. Going back to a comment I made this morning about the health affairs issue, you know, the data have to be secure at their origin, where they're developed. They have to be secure in transmission. They have to be secure in arrival. When data sets are mashed up from the Federal Communications Commission with the Department of Commerce, we got a new set of problems that are going on in a town in South Carolina. And I really like what someone said about this is not a 2014 work plan. It covers 2014, but this really is a vector pointing at a continuing piece of work. And at this point in it, I just want to urge consideration of not just whether it's HIPAA or not, it's a lot more.
I think the whole way we've been thinking is that HHS is a leader in helping people about things that might not necessarily be the data they themselves collect. Walter, you had a...
And since Linda may be still on, I wanted to mention with respect to the
data segmentation. I was talking to a few people, the possibility of perhaps having a joint session mm-hmm. with the standards privacy and security working group. I think there will be, and perhaps even the, target team, because I think it will be valuable to have those, the three groups' perspective, listening to the technology developments and standards developments around data segmentation.
That would be great. Thank you.
It was.
I think we've probably used up our time. So thank you all.
In terms of next steps in communication, then it sounds like we can look forward to more conference calls. And then I appreciated the work plan that was that Linda made sure we took a look at, because the infrastructure to get anything done still requires step by step. So I'll follow up with the subcommittee and with Maureen and pull together the direction you're trying to get to.
I think we should have, by unanimous consent, the notion that if Bruce wants to give a report about the Data Council during this session, and otherwise we will get to it tomorrow.
Tomorrow for that.
As you wish.
Are we rolling into our next block? We're in the 4:15 block. Do folks want 1 minute to break to stand up and stretch, do your Zumba routine?
If all you do is stand up.